Chapter 75. Tom felt that this was a rebuff for him, and could not but understand it as a left-handed hit at his employer. So he was silent. Mary felt that Mr. Pinch was not remarkable for presence of mind, and that he could not say too little under existing circumstances. So she was silent. The old man, disgusted by what in his suspicious nature he considered a shameless and fulsome puff of Mr. Pecksniff, which was a part of Tom's hired service and in which he was determined to persevere, set him down at once for a deceitful, servile, miserable fawner. So he was silent. And though they were all sufficiently uncomfortable, it is fair to say that Martin was perhaps the most so. For he had felt kindly towards Tom at first, and had been interested by his seeming simplicity. "You're like the rest," apostrophe he thought, glancing at the face of the unconscious Tom. "You had nearly imposed upon me, but you have lost your labor. You are too zealous a toad-eater, and betray yourself, Mr. Pinch." Apostrophe, during the whole remainder of the walk, not another word was spoken. First among the meetings to which Tom had long looked forward with a beating heart, it was memorable for nothing but embarrassment and confusion. They parted at the Dragon door, and sighing as he extinguished the candle in the lantern, Tom turned back again over the gloomy fields. As he approached the first stile, which was in a lonely part, made very dark by a plantation of young firs, a man slipped past him, and went on before. Coming to the stile he stopped, and took his seat upon it. Tom was rather startled, and for a moment stood still, but he stepped forward again immediately, and went close up to him. It was Jonas, swinging his legs to and fro, sucking the head of a stick, and looking with a sneer at Tom. "Good gracious me! Apostrophe, apostrophe," cried Tom, "who would have thought of its being you? You followed us, then? Apostrophe, what's that to you?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Jonas. "Go to the devil." "Apostrophe, you are not very civil, I think," apostrophe remarked Tom. "Civil enough for you," apostrophe retorted Jonas. "Who are you?" "Apostrophe, one who has as good a right to common consideration as another," apostrophe said Tom mildly. "You're a liar," apostrophe said Jonas. "You haven't a right to any consideration. You haven't a right to anything. You're a pretty sort of fellow, to talk about your rights, upon my soul. Ha, ha. Rights to." "Apostrophe, apostrophe, if you proceed in this way," apostrophe returned Tom, reddening, "you will oblige me to talk about my wrongs. But I hope your joke is over." "Apostrophe, it's the way with you curs," apostrophe said Mr. Jonas, "that when you know a man's in real earnest, you pretend to think he's joking, so that you may turn it off. But that won't do with me. It's too stale. Now just attend to me for a bit, Mr. Pitch, or Witch, or Stitch, or whatever your name is." "Apostrophe, my name is Pinch," apostrophe observed Tom. "Have the goodness to call me by it." "Apostrophe, what? You mustn't even be called out of your name, mustn't you?" "Apostrophe," cried Jonas. "Pauper prentices are looking up, I think. Ecod, we manage 'em a little better in the city." "Apostrophe, apostrophe, never mind what you do in the city," apostrophe said Tom. "What have you got to say to me?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, just this, Mr. Pinch," apostrophe retorted Jonas, thrusting his face so close to Tom's that Tom was obliged to retreat a step. "I advise you to keep your own counsel, and to avoid tittle-tattle, and not to cut in where you're not wanted. I've heard something of you, my friend, and your meek ways, and I recommend you to forget 'em till I am married to one of Pecksniff's gals, and not to curry favor among my relations, but to leave the course clear. You know, when curs won't leave the course clear, they're whipped off. So this is kind advice. Do you understand?" "Eh? Damn, who are you?" apostrophe cried Jonas, with increased contempt, "that you should walk home with them, unless it was behind them, like any other servant out of livery? Apostrophe, apostrophe, come. apostrophe apostrophe cried Tom, I see that you had better get off the stile, and let me pursue my way home. Make room for me, if you please. Apostrophe, don't think it. Apostrophe apostrophe said Jonas, spreading out his legs. Not till I choose. And I don't choose now. What? You're afraid of my making you split upon some of your babbling just now, are you, sneak? Apostrophe apostrophe, I am not afraid of many things, I hope, apostrophe said Tom, and certainly not of anything that you will do. I am not a tale-bearer, and I despise all meanness. You quite mistake me. Ah! Apostrophe cried Tom, indignantly. Is this manly from one in your position to one in mine? Please to make room for me to pass. The less I say, the better. Apostrophe, the less you say. Apostrophe, apostrophe, retorted Jonas, dangling his legs the more, and taking no heed of this request. You say very little, don't you? Ecod, I should like to know what goes on between you and a vagabond member of my family. There's very little in that too, I dare say. Apostrophe, I know no vagabond member of your family, apostrophe cried Tom, stoutly. You do. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Jonas. I don't, apostrophe said Tom. Your uncle's namesake, if you mean him, is no vagabond. Any comparison between you and him? Tom snapped his fingers at him, for he was rising fast in wrath as immeasurably to your disadvantage. Apostrophe, oh indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe sneered Jonas. And what do you think of his dearie, his beggarly leavings, eh, Mr. Pinch? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't mean to say another word, or stay here another instant, apostrophe replied Tom. As I told you before, you're a liar, apostrophe said Jonas, coolly. You will stay here till I give you leave to go. Now, keep where you are, will you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he flourished his stick over Tom's head. But in a moment it was spinning harmlessly in the air, and Jonas himself lay sprawling in the ditch. In the momentary struggle for the stick, Tom had brought it into violent contact with his opponent's forehead, and the blood welled out profusely from a deep cut on the temple. Tom was first apprised of this by seeing that he pressed his handkerchief to the wounded part, and staggered as he rose, being stunned. Are you hurt? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Tom. I am very sorry. Lean on me for a moment. You can do that without forgiving me, if you still bear me malice. But I don't know why, for I never offended you before we met on this spot. Apostrophe, he made him no answer, not appearing at first to understand him, or even to know that he was hurt, though he several times took his handkerchief from the cut to look vacantly at the blood upon it. After one of these examinations, he looked at Tom, and then there was an expression in his features, which showed that he understood what had taken place, and would remember it. Nothing more passed between them as they went home. Jonas kept a little in advance, and Tom Pinch sadly followed, thinking of the grief which the knowledge of this quarrel must occasion his excellent benefactor. When Jonas knocked at the door, Tom's heart beat higher when Miss Mercy answered it, and seeing her wounded lover, shrieked aloud, higher, when he followed them into the family parlor, higher than at any other time, when Jonas spoke. Don't make a noise about it, apostrophe he said. It's nothing worth mentioning. I didn't know the road. The night's very dark, and just as I came up with Mr. Pinch he turned his face towards Tom, but not his eyes. I ran against a tree. It's only skin deep. Apostrophe, cold water, Mary, my child. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Pecksniff. Brown paper. Scissors. A piece of old linen. Charity, my dear, make a bandage. Bless me, Mr. Jonas. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh, bother your nonsense. Apostrophe, returned the gracious son-in-law elect. Be of some use if you can. If you can't, get out. Apostrophe, Miss Charity, though called upon to lend her aid, sat upright in one corner, with a smile upon her face, and didn't move a finger. Though Mercy laved the wound herself, and Mr. Pecksniff held the patient's head between his two hands, as if without that assistance it must inevitably come in half, and Tom Pinch, in his guilty agitation, shook a bottle of Dutch drops until they were nothing but English froth, and in his other hand sustained a formidable carving knife, really intended to reduce the swelling, but apparently designed for the ruthless infliction of another wound. As soon as that was dressed, Charity rendered not the least assistance, nor uttered a word. But when Mr. Jonas's head was bound up, and he had gone to bed, and everybody else had retired, and the house was quiet, Mr. Pinch, as he sat mournfully on his bedstead, ruminating, heard a gentle tap at his door, and opening it, saw her, to his great astonishment, standing before him with her finger on her lip. "Mr. Pinch," apostrophe she whispered. "Dear Mr. Pinch, tell me the truth. You did that? There was some quarrel between you, and you struck him? I am sure of it." Apostrophe, it was the first time she had ever spoken kindly to Tom, in all the many years they had passed together. He was stupefied with amazement. "Was it so, or not?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, she eagerly demanded. "I was very much provoked," apostrophe said Tom. "Then it was?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Charity, with sparkling eyes. "Yes. We had a struggle for the path," apostrophe said Tom. "But I didn't mean to hurt him so much." Apostrophe, "not so much." Apostrophe, apostrophe, she repeated, clenching her hand and stamping her foot, to Tom's great wonder. "Don't say that. It was brave of you. I honor you for it. If you should ever quarrel again, don't spare him for the world, but beat him down and set your shoe upon him. Not a word of this to anybody. Dear Mr. Pinch, I am your friend from tonight. I am always your friend from this time." Apostrophe, she turned her flushed face upon Tom, to confirm her words by its kindling expression, and seizing his right hand, pressed it to her breast, and kissed it. And there was nothing personal in this to render it at all embarrassing, for even Tom, whose power of observation was by no means remarkable, knew from the energy with which she did it, that she would have fondled any hand, no matter how bedaubed or dyed, that had broken the head of Jonas Chuzzlewit. Tom went into his room, and went to bed, full of uncomfortable thoughts. That there should be any such tremendous division in the family as he knew must have taken place to convert Charity Pecksniff into his friend, for any reason, but, above all, for that which was clearly the real one, that Jonas, who had assailed him with such exceeding coarseness, should have been sufficiently magnanimous to keep the secret of their quarrel, and that any train of circumstances should have led to the commission of an assault and battery by Thomas Pinch upon any man calling himself the friend of Seth Pecksniff, were matters of such deep and painful cogitation that he could not close his eyes. His own violence, in particular, so preyed upon the generous mind of Tom, that coupling it with the many former occasions on which he had given Mr. Pecksniff pain and anxiety, occasions of which that gentleman often reminded him, he really began to regard himself as destined by a mysterious fate to be the evil genius and bad angel of his patron. But he fell asleep at last, and dreamed new source of waking uneasiness, that he had betrayed his trust, and run away with Mary Graham. It must be acknowledged that, asleep or awake, Tom's position in reference to this young lady was full of uneasiness. The more he saw of her, the more he admired her beauty, her intelligence, the amiable qualities that even won on the divided house of Pecksniff, and in a few days restored, at all events, the semblance of harmony and kindness between the angry sisters. When she spoke, Tom held his breath, so eagerly he listened. When she sang, he sat like one entranced. She touched his organ, and from that bright epoch even it, the old companion of his happiest hours, incapable as he had thought of elevation, began a new and deified existence. "God's love upon thy patience, Tom, who, that had beheld thee, for 3 summer weeks, pouring through half the dead long night over the jingling anatomy of that inscrutable old harpsichord in the back parlor, could have missed the entrance to thy secret heart, albeit it was dimly known to thee, who that had seen the glow upon thy cheek, when leaning down to listen, after hours of labor, for the sound of one incorrigible note, thou foundest that it had a voice at last, and wheezed out a flat something, distantly akin to what it ought to be, would not have known, that it was destined for no common touch, but one that smote, though gently as an angel's hand, upon the deepest chord within thee. And if a friendly glance I, even though it were as guileless as thine own, dear Tom, could have but pierced the twilight of that evening, when, in a voice well tempered to the time, sad, sweet, and low, yet hopeful, she first sang to the altered instrument, and wondered at the change, and thou, sitting apart at the open window, kept a glad silence and a swelling heart must, not that glance have read perforce the dawning of a story, Tom, that it were well for thee had never been begun. Tom Pinch's situation was not made the less dangerous, or difficult by the fact of no one word passing between them in reference to Martin. Honorably mindful of his promise, Tom gave her opportunities of all kinds. Early and late he was in the church, in her favorite walks, in the village, in the garden, in the meadows, and in any or all of these places he might have spoken freely. But no, at all such times she carefully avoided him, or never came in his way unaccompanied. It could not be that she disliked or distrusted him, for by a thousand little delicate means, too slight for any notice but his own, she singled him out when others were present, and showed herself the very soul of kindness. Could it be that she had broken with Martin, or had never returned his affection, save in his own bold and heightened fancy? Tom's cheek grew red with self-reproach as he dismissed the thought. All this time old Martin came and went in his own strange manner, or sat among the rest absorbed within himself, and holding little intercourse with anyone. Although he was unsocial, he was not willful in other things, or troublesome, or morose, being never better pleased than when they left him quite unnoticed at his book, and pursued their own amusements in his presence, unreserved. It was impossible to discern in whom he took an interest, or whether he had an interest in any of them. Unless they spoke to him directly, he never showed that he had ears or eyes for anything that passed. One day the lively Mary, sitting with downcast eyes under a shady tree in the churchyard, whither she had retired, after fatiguing herself by the imposition of sundry trials on the temper of Mr. Jonas, felt that a new shadow came between her and the sun. Raising her eyes in the expectation of seeing her betrothed, she was not a little surprised to see old Martin instead. Her surprise was not diminished when he took his seat upon the turf beside her, and opened a conversation thus. "When are you to be married?" "Oh, dear Mr. Chuzzlewit, my goodness me, I'm sure I don't know. Not yet a while, I hope."
"You hope?"
said the old man. It was very gravely said, but she took it for banter, and giggled excessively. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.